Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, with occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Andy Lerner, Amara Enya, Stephanie Hitt, and John Kochelko. Our program tonight, coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. It's nice to have you with us. By the way, if you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com. And again, that's the audio and video portion of the program. Nice to have you with us this evening. Like the last couple of weeks, we have a full docket of things to discuss because President Trump is making news every single moment of the day. I want to begin with, however, I think probably the big news, and we've mentioned many times in the past in the history of this show, whoever is elected president, generally speaking, in the first several months, a president is tested. It's tested by somebody around the world. Tonight, it is the leader of North Korea that is testing the Trump administration. As the president was at Mar-a-Lago last night with the Prime Minister of Japan enjoying dinner, North Korea let off a missile test that fell into the Japanese Sea of Japan. And the president said, very emphatically, that they're going to stand 100% behind a longtime ally, Japan. But again, this is a tinderbox. It always is. You have one of the most irrational leaders in the world. I'm talking about the North Korean leader. And John Kochelko, you are our sort of a semi-historian and also a former Illinois state representative. You join us, longtime guest on this program.
Thank you.
My question to you is, do you fear North Korea? I mean, can this escalate beyond control?
No, I don't think so. I think that it has to be made clear to North Korea in some way that we will not tolerate them acquiring the ability to hit the United States with a ballistic missile carrying a nuclear weapon. At this point, their ballistic missile technology is primitive, their nuclear technology is primitive, but at some point they are going to develop a deliverable nuclear warhead. I think it has to be made clear to them. I think the president said we will not tolerate that and we will use whatever means are necessary to prevent it.
Stephanie Hitt is our card-carrying Republican tonight. Stephanie, your answer to that same question. Do you worry about?
I don't worry. I think what's very clear is that we're going to work closely with South Korea and Japan on that. And I think that not that we can totally trust China. I think China does keep North Korea on a short leash. The real test will be the relationship with China and Trump and how they control this.
Amara Enya, your reaction.
I think it would be wise to continue the policies that existed the previous four and really the previous 8 years under the Obama administration as it relates to North Korea. I think we've always had a strong stance with North Korea and have always made clear that we do not tolerate their development even of nuclear missiles. And this is another test. So I think they're testing to see what a President Trump will do. At this time, I think it would be wise and prudent for Trump to exhibit some of the level-headedness to be able to handle this in a way that doesn't exacerbate the test.
Bill Richardson, a longtime Democratic member of administrations, was on the television today, and he basically acknowledged that President Trump responded in a positive way, wasn't too bellicose, was very specific, and obviously to the point in his statement last night. So he gave him – that's probably the first time I've heard a Democrat say something positive about Donald Trump. Since he got elected. Andy Lerner joins us. Andy, we should mention to the audience that you're a concerned voice from beyond the Beltway. You're not a political operative in any way. You're more of an independent. We ran into each other the other day. You said you listen to the show regularly, and you spouted off on so many different subjects. I said, wait a minute, we got to have you on the show. So let's put your foreign policy hat on. Are you worried about North Korea, and how do we keep them intact?
Well, of course I'm worried about North Korea. Now, obviously, they're not an advanced country. You know, if you look at them from a satellite, there's three light bulbs. But a nuclear weapon is a nuclear weapon, and sooner or later it becomes a concern. And I don't care if it can reach the United States or not. You don't go out firing off nukes anywhere in the world and have anything good happen from it. What people don't understand, I don't think they're talking about, is what an incredible opportunity this is for Donald Trump, Japan, China, and all of us to move forward and perhaps even develop a policy across the globe towards nuclear weapons.
But what does it do also? Because one of the concerns that the administration and this one and the previous one had about China is they're building these islands, off their coast, which, again, we have Navy ships, circling in that area. But again, is there any way that we can ask China to basically come down hard on Korea, or are we going to have to sort of bend a little bit in the building of these islands?
You know, we've heard about how Donald Trump has apparently agreed to continue the one China policy, how this was a bottom line for the People's Republic of China. No. Well, I think we should make it clear to China that North Korea not possessing weaponry that can threaten us or our allies, that's a bottom line for the United States. And that if China has the ability to prevent this, it would be perhaps best if China were to use its influence. But that ultimately we will not tolerate North Korea threatening us, Japan, South Korea, or anyone else.
Because their test, even though at the moment they may not have the ability to deliver anything to the United States, we don't know how close they are to being able to deliver something, obviously, to South Korea. It would seem to be relatively
easy. Well, and I think, the standing with the prime minister from Japan, I think that sent a very clear message, not just to North Korea, but to China. And that's really, at the end of the day, what China is going to have to face up to is that there's going to be a very strong alliance with South Korea, Japan, the U.S., and that's not going away.
That was actually the point that I was going to make. I thought it was the timing of the meeting with the Prime Minister of Japan, really sending that signal, reinforcing our relationship with Japan. I really think that the strategy for engaging North Korea is going to depend on the relationships that we develop or cultivate with China, with Japan, with the other countries in that region. That's going to determine how well we can work together or collaboratively to have a unified strategy as it relates to North Korea.
I also think that if you've not read this, but when President Obama left the Oval Office, he left an envelope for President Trump, as every president does, and no one revealed what it was at that time. But again, it's now been revealed that it was a warning about North Korea, that North Korea could be a first challenge to him.
And, our relationship with Japan in the Pacific is almost as important as our relationship with Great Britain in Europe and in the Atlantic. And I think it was very beneficial to have this quick visit by the Japanese Prime Minister. He came to see President Trump during the interim after his election. And I think forging an especially strong relationship with Japan, not only in regards to North Korea, but also regards to China.
And also the conversations with China.
That's right.
I mean he's talked to a lot of people in 3 weeks.
That's right.
Let me ask the $64 question here. If a preemptive strike against North Korea was the only way to guarantee that they would never have nuclear weapons, is that a good idea, Andy?
Probably not at this stage. You have to keep that option on the table, but you have to ask yourself, what can bring Japan and China to the table here? And although it might be risky, think of this. There has been a historic amount of tension for hundreds of years between Japan and China. Now we have this happen while the Japanese minister is here visiting. Let us think, and it will take a lot of diplomacy and people smarter than me to figure out how to do this, but it's a great opportunity. Perhaps we up the ante.
And we're going to let you follow that when we come back after these commercials. Don't go away.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Thanks for being with us. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Andy Lerner, you were about to make a point, so we'll let you finish it up.
Well, I was just saying that I think we need to put some pressure on China to do their job and bring North Korea to heel as best they can. And one of the ways to do that is to take advantage of the tension between them and Japan that's been always been there, and perhaps station in Okinawa or let the Japan control some defense systems there, possibly even nuclear, although that's, you know, a very great risk. But at that point, then you can bring them all to the table, and President Trump looks strong on the issue, and then you back away and you encourage a further nuclear pact between everybody. And you start letting the Chinese and Japan come to a decision that we're going to make this happen some way, and then perhaps we get all the nuclear nations together and say, enough of this. If you want nuclear power, pay for it, we'll build you a plant. There's plenty of nuclear power plants that don't produce materials that can be used for bomb making.
Do you think is that doable?
I would be strongly against a preemptive strike against North Korea, because we also have to think about Iran. There are other players in this space. And so if we set the tone with a preemptive strike against North Korea, we have to think about, okay, how do we follow that through with Iran and other entities that are developing nuclear capacity?
If the alternative is an ICBM in the hands of North Korea that can hit Honolulu or Los Angeles or Anchorage, I will go with if we've tried everything else.
What about Seoul and
Oh, of course. Of course.
Because that's going to be the first to blow.
We also have to think about the fact that this regime hates the United States. I mean, they have not forgotten one bit of the Korean War. They hate the United States.
Right.
And I think they would understand that their enemy, the one that they want to strike against, is us. But, of course, we don't want them to have the ability to hit Tokyo or Seoul either.
We'd have to be very careful, though, also, because with what happened in Iraq as well, where we suspected there were nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction, and that turned out to be false, and we ended up in this long war.
Well, North Korea is an interesting place because, unlike Iran, North Korea, there's somebody watching over, and that's China. So we actually have what could eventually be a partner in controlling North Korea that we don't have maybe with some of these other countries.
Yeah, but China isn't going to do it without a significant price. Let's go to Jeff listening to us in Elkhart, Indiana on WMNC. Go ahead. Nice to hear from Indiana tonight, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you taking the call. Just curious, with the Donald Trump ban and all the hype in the media there, you know, you don't hear too many people concerned, at least in my blue-collar community, about North Korean immigrants bombing the United States. Now, with all the nuclear debate about North Korea, how about Pakistan? I mean, Mr. Hussein, who is known to be tied with Kim Jong-un in North Korea on their nuclear development, shouldn't the focus be more on who already has the nuclear development, not focus the attention to Kim Jong and him firing off a firework while Trump
I agree with you. I think we have to, you know, those that get in the nuclear club are treated differently than those that aren't in the club trying to get into the club. But I would say that when you look at the irrational behavior historically of not only this leader but frankly his father, they really have nothing to lose. They really don't. I think more than maybe any other leader in the world, they don't have anything to lose because they're in such dire straits. So I would be fearful of them. And again, these tests, obviously, they're provocative. And if you let them go unfettered and don't try to stop them or dissuade them in some way, at some point, they may come up with the ability to do that. And I frankly think I would be more worried about them than I would about Iran.
Well, and that I was just going to bring to light, you know, Rouhani and all the speculation and all the nuclear development there. Again, putting focus and bringing to light the attention of the ban that Trump has enforced all for good intention. Pakistan, Iran, right. Pakistan, Hussein being under the radar as far as a presidential leader. Right. Yeah. You don't hear about him in the media.
Right. That's a good point. We're going to move on. Thank you for your call. We're going to move to Tom in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on the Big 57 WKBN. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Bruce, and to your guests. You know, it seems to me North Korea has been a pain for quite a while. I mean, not only do we have a great cost in military defense of South Korea, but they've been printing counterfeit $100 bills for quite a period of time and a tremendous amount. Not only that, but exporting arms to terrorists and disrupting the world stability that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious if your guests have any idea, Bruce, if you do, as to why Trump took that negotiation chip of the one China policy off the table. It seems to me that he could have used that to get China not only to maybe negotiate with North Korea or pull rein North Korea in a little bit, but also to maybe get them to cut back on their expansion.
Unless that is part of what he will be asking for from the North Koreans. That's what I'm saying is that, you know, we have concerns about with China. We have issues about trade. We have the offshore islands that I just referenced. I mean, those are military things that we've been concerned about. But when you weigh that against whether or not China can use its influence basically to defang North Korea, maybe defanging North Korea is part of what Trump will negotiate with. I mean, it's a very tricky thing. I mean, the scariest thing about me is I think that, you know, the leader of North Korea is an irrational nut job.
I agree. I mean, it's hard to make plans or even develop a strategy when you can't predict what the leader of North Korea will do. And because what our relationship with China is tied so much into our trade agreements and to so many other things, it just makes it all the more difficult to have a clear strategy with how we'll engage with North Korea and how China will engage with North Korea.
Yeah. Because the other point is, you know, whether or not, you know, I think it's debatable whether how soon they would be able to have the ability to, let's say, hit the west coast of the United States. But again, their ability to hit Seoul and Tokyo is probably considerably a shorter amount of time to wait.
And Guam, which is American territory. I mean, yeah. Guam is
and
an
the DMZ.
American
I mean, that is the most tense place in the world, as the DMZ has been for 40 years.
You know, one other thought, yeah, if I could, and that is Trump being unconventional, any chance of him using Dennis Rodman to negotiate?
Tom, during the break, I said, is Ambassador Dennis Rodman going to be used? And I'm going to predict something. I predict he will be used to some extent, okay? Maybe as comic relief, but no, that's a chit that... you know, we may hear future about.
Certainly as bait, some sort of bait.
Maybe he'll send Meryl Streep to North Korea.
Yeah, could be.
Another great program, Bruce.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Excuse me for the sneeze there. Let's switch gears and talk about another subject, and that is that the immigration policy has been challenged in court. What do you think is next? Should the administration, John, fight for this in court, or should they just go back and rewrite the executive order?
Well, they have so many options. I mean, and they can do some of them simultaneously. They can continue to pursue the defense of their existing order. And this has been misunderstood. I saw NBC today on Meet the Press. The Trump executive order was overturned by the... Well, no, it wasn't overturned. It was the request for lifting the stay of the order. It is the order itself has not been overturned by the district court or the appellate court. But they can issue a new executive order that tidies up the paperwork, removes a few of the problems, and then if the Ninth Circuit overturns that, it may weaken their case on ultimate appeal to the Supreme Court.
Well,
because it makes it appear more of a knee-jerk political decision rather than a real legal
decision.
Will
that be perceived as weakness, though?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it would be
perceived by Trump's base. Would it be perceived as weakness if Trump had to rewrite, if he chose to rewrite the law as opposed to continuing a challenge in court?
No, I don't believe so. I think they have no choice but to continue to follow the court system, and they should embrace that. They should understand and explain to their base that the no decision has been made on this and that it's just a stay. Courts do this all the time to give themselves time to examine the issue in more detail than we or anybody else can. Let the process play out until they can tell, Trump can tell his base, we'll let the process play out and we have other options that we're developing to move forward should we lose this case. This is not difficult. Trump supporters are just as rational as anyone else.
I thought that he weakened his case when he tweeted, "See you in court," in all caps. And then, you know, the court, I mean, we are the court, right? So I thought that actually weakened his position. I think it's prudent to make sure that you have something that is legally sound, and that is actually the court's responsibility. So it, the mischaracterization of what happened with the decision, I think, was partly the responsibility of the Trump administration and how he reacted to how things played out. Mm-hmm. So now this is an opportunity for him to actually create something that makes a lot more sense, that's much more thoughtful in its implementation.
I completely disagree. I think what it is I don't think that this is the media has in many ways completely mischaracterized what's happened. And I think a lot of people are going to have to learn this. Trump supporters know that. They don't even trust the media's right. characterization anymore. No. And one of the things, here's a perfect example. People aren't even talking about the fact that there's a district court in Massachusetts that upheld the stay. And understanding, without going into a big lesson here, if you are going to proceed to the next level, say going to the Supreme Court, other district court opinions will come in. So he has actually a very strong case going forward if he does continues with this particular version and that. And I think he's going to use all of his options. He's going to get the temporary stay, get it right in the ninth thing, and then proceed elsewhere because he's got some good arguments coming out of the Second Circuit there.
He also may not want it to go to the Supreme Court now. He may want to try to
he
get
wants
it.
To hold.
They may want to delay this until Gorsuch is on
his
court.
Exactly.
Right.
That's a good plan.
That will be a good point. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the deportation raids that took place over the last 72 hours. When we come back from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Before the break, I referred to the deportation raids. That's what the media is calling them. I think probably in general discussion, most people would agree that there were raids. ICE, however, does not like the use of that term. They like to use targeted enforcement. So there's been targeted enforcement of the immigration laws, and some of this was going on during the Obama administration aggressively, and then they kind of pulled back a little bit, and it seems to be going back to at least the initial Obama era of directions of the ICE, and maybe it's going a little bit further now. Of course, Donald Trump, when he read the story, he wanted to take credit that he was, you know, delivering on another promise, but we don't know whether there's any fact to that or not. But again, there are literally hundreds of thousands of people who are undocumented in the United States now, and they are worried about what the new enforcement is going to be like. So let me ask this, because during the campaign and even last week when he was touting his new attorney general, he was talking about going after the drug lords and the drug dealers and the cartels, and he was focusing attention on those that were involved in illegal activity. My question to you, I'm going to start this one with you, Andy. What should be the criteria used by ICE to determine whether someone is a criminal or not? I mean, obviously, if you're a drug dealer, if you're a murderer, you're a rapist, you know, they're bad hombres, as the president would say, get them out. But how? Let's go down the list of other crimes that you personally think should be included in that list of people that should be deported.
That's a difficult question. It really is. I can lose my privileges to drive by not paying two tickets. And, and just the almost being here illegally is a crime, but let's not blame immigrants. Let's first stop that bashing before we do anything else and understand that people who are trying to get a better life for themselves and their family are not the problem. There are many of them that are not good people, and how we target them, well, we try to get good information before we let them in, and the ones who overstay their visas and the ones that are illegal and cross, we do our best to track them down.
Okay.
I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer that question.
I want to get everybody in the conversation. Amara, what crimes should be deportable?
I think the crimes that have been outlined already should be deportable. So robbery, rape, burglary, those crimes that we understand even in our own communities to be for people who go to prison or are jailed because of them, I think that should also be the equivalent.
What about a fake ID?
It's a little more blurry because the harm from the fake ID, I mean, if it's a stolen ID, someone else's identity, I think that's a little bit different from someone acquiring their own fake ID to allow them to drive or to allow them to get a job.
Stephanie, what do you think?
It's very interesting because clearly the administration has made it clear that the illegality is based on public safety concerns. And that, and so we all agree, robbery, rape, murder, those kinds of things. But it is interesting because it is a huge problem in this country is identity theft, the theft of credit card numbers. I've been a victim of it multiple times. And a lot of it is these groups that go and make the fake identifications. They steal legitimate numbers. You are getting into that area where it's hurting people in this country to have that kind of crime. So there's an argument that maybe you have your fake ID that maybe not alone, but if you find a circle, a whole group of people that are stealing numbers and using them and selling the credit cards.
How about a fake Social Security card so you get a job, so you can go to work every day, so you can make money and send it to your family that needs it back in Mexico? John, should someone who has a fake Social Security card, is that a deportable offense?
Well, you're breaking the law. I mean, I saw this on the interview shows today where the Trump spokesman was saying the White House, the administration can't be in the position of telling ICE, well, this is against the law, but ignore it and just concentrate on something else. I mean, actually, they're going to have a hierarchy. They're going to go after those who have committed crimes of a public safety, of a violent nature. But ultimately, if you're guilty of breaking the law and you're here illegally to begin with, remember, you're talking about people who are here illegally to begin with. One of the problems we haven't even addressed is how many of the illegal people present here are people who came here on visas and just overstayed their visa. And they were supposed to leave at a point in time and never did. They're breaking the law.
But here's my question. Let's say over the last 72 hours, 500 people were rounded up. Okay, again, it's not a term that ICE likes, but I'll use the term. They were rounded up, okay? In Los Angeles, the jurisdiction of Los Angeles, according to the published reports today, 96% of those that were picked up in Los Angeles had criminal records, many of them violent criminal records. Okay, so it's easy to say, okay, those 96, put them on a train or move them out. But the question is, if in that group you have, let's say, 150 people who have a phony Social Security card, and they've been in the country, they came to the country illegally, okay, so they have broken the law. They have a fake Social Security card, so they broke the law. They've worked for 25 or 30 years supporting their family, and have broken no other laws. Should they be in the first wave of people that are sent back to Mexico, or do they go into a lower priority?
They go into a lower priority. The reality is that we have finite resources to begin with. So we don't have unlimited resources in deportations with the departments that are responsible for identifying individuals who have broken the law. So that means we have to prioritize. And I think it is the right move to prioritize those criminals, hardened criminals, who are public safety threats.
What he said during the campaign.
Precisely.
He specifically said that during
the campaign. Precisely. And I think that's fine.
He didn't say he wouldn't go after the others, But a priority would be the gangbangers and those.
Right, and he have said that. He said public safety and drug dealers.
Right,
violent.
Which have which a hierarchy is, and those guilty of violent crime.
I think that's perfectly reasonable. But for those who, if someone paid, got a fake Social Security card, I think this just speaks to the need for immigration reform and to actually make the necessary changes to the immigration system.
But
that person probably has paid taxes. Those people who've been here for 20, 25 years, they do pay into a system that they cannot extract from. So to have them in that first wave of deportees, I think, is completely wrong.
But you have to remember that may be a crime. That crime may be low on the ladder, but not too far from that, but still a very hurtful to society crime is that next layer of there's whole rings and circles of people that are getting not just fake security numbers, but the identity theft, the credit cards that, you know, people are selling credit card numbers to illegal immigrants. They go in, use the credit card for as long as they can. They buy the credit card for like $25, $30, $50. They get $300 or $400 use until they get caught.
But the way
they can target the ring all the time.
What she's talking about is a growing up. You mentioned that you were
huge.
I was hit last week myself on a credit card situation.
Right.
So again, and also a similar thing in a banking situation.
Right.
And the bank person that I spoke with said, This is a fast growing crime.
Right.
But they can target those rings. There's a difference between targeting a card cracking ring and targeting the person who unknowingly was a recipient of a card that might have been cracked. That's what they can use their resources to target rings that
break them. What I would say is that if someone has committed identity theft, now again they haven't murdered anybody, they haven't raped anybody. But identity theft, to me, is I would have that in a higher priority level.
Definitely.
Because
it's not a victimless crime.
It is not a victimless crime anyway.
Let's
go to Brian in Roselle, Illinois, listening to us on WCGO. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, good evening. Another dynamic or dimension to this problem is the employer. The American employer who cheats by knowingly employing illegal immigrants is the problem.
Yes.
They are criminals also.
Yes.
And I'd like to, I wish somebody would get up, including media people, and explain to the American public why out of control, unregulated immigration is bad. It's obviously a bad deal for the average American. Wages have been flat for 30 years. Why? Because we've had a massive wave of immigrants. That's part of the problem. And we need to go after the employer. That's what I'd like to hear discussed.
Andy.
Thank you very much. Very good point. There is no excuse for it whatsoever. An employer who gets caught hiring illegal immigrants should have to pay that immigrant twice the wage that he should be paid and pay that for 2 years, just assuming that that's how long they were there, and then pay the same fine. And if he gets arrested again, they should think about their business. If we do that, then people have less reason to come here illegally. If we need new workers.
So you're talking about E-Verify, and not everybody is for E-Verify. I mean, like the Speaker of the House isn't a big fan of E-Verify. Because there's a lot of business owners, many of whom are Republicans, who
precisely
don't care about. That's why this thing hasn't been done.
Right. And I was going to say the irony.
People don't want it to happen.
Exactly. And even in southern states, and where in the agricultural sector, in the restaurant industry, they actually have a vested interest in having that influx of immigrants who are doing the work. They are paying them under the table, paying them below wages, but they have a vested interest. And I do think that's part of the reason why we haven't moved forward on immigration reform.
Absolutely. Everybody agrees on that. Let's go to Jeff in Youngstown, WKBN. Go ahead, Jeff.
Good evening, gentlemen. First of all, when you try to go into Mexico, if you tried to sneak into there and do anything, you were arrested and put in prison, as we saw one of our military men that was arrested trying to go that way. The other thing is you don't have to punish any employers. Give anybody that's coming over there to work in a place where Americans won't take that job, let them have a status where they can come over here and work. But they have to be returned. They have to return when it's over. And the situation is, it doesn't make sense to punish the jobs that are needed for people to hire if you have somebody that's going to work for that. Because otherwise, our produce would cost trillions of dollars.
All right, listen, thanks for your call. We got to move to a break. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through February, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Chris in Fort Wayne, Indiana, listening to us on WoWo. Go ahead. You're on the air, Indiana.
How you doing, sir?
Oh, how are you?
Good. Hey, I'm a local cop in Fort Wayne.
Uh-huh.
I'm a detective. I do financial crimes and corruption here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys are missing the point on a specific issue. I keep mentioning fake Social Security cards, fake driver's license. Those aren't fake. Okay? If they work... If the Social Security number works, that belongs to somebody. That's not fake. You cannot fake a Social Security number, as well as a driver's license. A driver's license has a history that follows it. So you can't fake a driver's license. The only thing you can fake is possibly an ID card. They don't typically have a history that follows them. People steal, one of your people on there mentioned, you know, stolen credit card numbers and such, and I don't know if they said fake credit card numbers, but those aren't fake either. Those belong to a bank. It belongs to an individual. It affects them. So all this stuff affects people. It's not like, hey, I got a fake SOSH. It's not hurting anybody. It is. It affects their taxes. They all of a sudden get a surprise at the end of the year when they get W-2s from who knows where. It doesn't belong to them, and now they got this tax mess. So... It affects, there's a trickle-down effect.
Chris, I agree with you completely. I think what we were saying is that they're not victimless crimes. And, in fact, they can be very, very hurtful and very complicated crimes.
It is.
And that's, even in what you would consider the sort of the lower end crime, nonviolent, is still incredibly hurtful to society and to the individuals that are the victims of that, for sure. And you know, maybe it's not bodily harm, but it's certainly
significant.
It could
be close. It could be a lot more than just financial damage. I know someone whose identity was stolen, and she ended up being picked up on a warrant for her arrest and spent 3 days in jail.
Exactly.
I can't tell you how many visits to court to make sure it was off her record. No, it's certainly not a victimless crime. But there are practical steps that can limit this.
What I was told, though, officer, is that in my particular case, with a credit card, is that there are scanners that are in many locations, not exclusively gas stations, but sometimes at gas stations.
They're called skimmers.
Skimmers, right. They get the number, but then a physical... counterfeit card is created.
Yep, I've investigated a bunch of them, and
right.
I got a ring out of Chicago in your town there that I'm still looking for somebody there that I can't find because he's really good at it.
Okay. So, again, in your mind, I mean, let me ask you the question, officer. What is a deportable crime in your view? Are all crimes deportable in your view?
Well, if you're affecting other people's lives in our country, I'd say, yeah. I mean, I don't know how you don't. If you got a taxable income, you're working a real job, you're affecting somebody else because you don't have a real Social Security number. You got one that belongs to somebody else. I wouldn't want that person in the country if they were using mine. Have you ever had, you know, your credit report and find out all this crap's on there and then long a process it is to get that stuff cleared off? It's horrible.
Well, I haven't had that, but just literally in the last couple of weeks, I've had a couple of one with a credit card, one when banking, where there was identity. The check number, the credit card number was stolen. So I know it can be
that's
injurious.
Not identity theft. That's not identity theft. No. That's just credit card fraud.
Right.
The bank has to pay Visa or MasterCard to have that logo and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The bank is required to cover the fraud. So you're made whole. But it's still credit card fraud against you, but it's going against the bank. And guess what? Our interest rates go up. I mean, they have a level that they assume the risk on, but they don't want to go over budget when they pay off all these. They want the convenience of you having a credit card.
Right.
But the banks are taking a hit, so they affect our interest rates.
Okay, Chris, thanks very much for your call. We're going to go to Ron in Benton Harbor, Michigan, listening to us on WSJM. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Bruce. Bruce, a couple of points, if I may. You know, we all know the North Korean leader is unhinged, but to not say our president is not unhinged is also incorrect. I mean, many credible people are saying we have a president, you know, and the North Koreans have printed up some $100 bills, but the Russians are hacking our election, and we have a president who's bragging about it. Come on, that guy's not unhinged. That's just one point. And then here's another point about people using illegal.
I don't think he's bragging about the election, but go ahead. Continue your point.
But here's another point, Bruce. You know, people say it's a crime, which it is, to use different identification. You go to the good high schools and the best schools in New Trier or that. That's a common practice in the Polish and Ukrainian and Eastern European community where they fake that. And I've never seen anybody caught. You know, I heard one person caught in Cleveland, a black woman, and she had to pay everything back. But that's a common practice. And then we got the Ukrainians hacking into our credit cards. You know, I don't hear any – I'm not saying that – the Mexican cartels are not hacking in, but these are white people. We don't want to go after these white people, mm-hmm. right? Because they look like us.
John, do you think there's something to that?
The left's rule of thumb is, when in doubt, holler racism. I mean, it's their stock standard argument against anything and everything. When they disagree with someone, he's a racist. You see these protest demonstrations, the word racist and fascist. I mean, I really pay very little attention to this. It's just their standard argument about everything.
I think that to write off the role that racism has played in institutions in this country, how it has been to the detriment of people of color for generations, is foolhardy. And to now say that protesters, because protesters are calling out racism, that delegitimizes the fact that racism has actually harmed generations of people. I strongly disagree with that. And furthermore, I do think that there is a factor when we talk about the kinds of crimes. So even when we talk about white collar crimes, we talk about federal crimes and what happens with politicians when they get the cushy positions in federal prison. The politicians who use their clout, like our governor, to get their children into schools that they did not otherwise get into, that's not a victimless crime either, because they're taking a spot from someone else who could have gotten that position. But we don't see it the same way as a Mexican using a Social Security card. So where do we draw the line? I think it's a legitimate point.
Go ahead, Ron. 10 seconds, because we're about to go to a break.
One more point, Bruce. You know, all these beautiful mansions that are being built in Evanston and all these suburbs. You know, if you ever check out the work crews, which are mainly Europeans, most of those people are not being paid Social Security. They're being paid under the table. And I like to check their papers, too. But, no, that never happens, because ICE doesn't go into Evanston and Highland Park and those there rich white suburbs.
So Ron, you've made your point. You've shared it with our national audience. We will continue with Beyond the Beltway after news. Don't go away. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Bruce Dumont back. We continue. Let's talk about our national security advisor, Michael Flynn, General Michael Flynn. He is on the front pages again in the news because he had conversations with a Russian ambassador. There was the allegation that he was talking about Russian sanctions before Donald Trump was president of the United States. And he told the vice president of the United States that they were not talking about sanctions. And then there was the story that broke last week when someone from the intelligence community leaked some information about telephone conversations that were recorded involving Flynn and his Russian counterpart, or a Russian diplomat, which indicated that there were discussions of sanctions. So I'm going to begin with you, John. In this particular case, should Michael Flynn keep his job? Did he do anything? Because it's the question is, did he violate the Logan Act? As a private citizen, he wasn't speaking for the government when he had this conversation. And it was anything said that he should lose his job over?
I don't see a problem with that. After all, he was the incoming national security advisor to the president-elect of the United States, which puts him several notches above an ordinary common citizen.
Right.
Technically, was he in office yet? No. Is he going to be in office in a few weeks? Yes. It seems to me perfectly plausible for him to have a discussion with a Russian ambassador. And if the subject of the existing sanctions came up, I don't have a problem with that. The only question I have in this story is, why did he not fully divulge this to the vice president? Did he, in fact, mislead the vice president? It's embarrassing for Mike Pence to go out and give him a full-throated defense, yeah, and then to find out that maybe he was given bad information. That's the only aspect of this I have a problem with.
Amara, what do you think?
I completely agree. I think it's the confidence in his ability to be forthright and for the vice president and the president to trust their national security advisor. I mean, if you can't trust that he said what he said or that he did what he said he'd done, then you can't be confident that he can operate in the best interest of the country.
I think we all agree on this one, actually, Bruce. Okay. And I think that's because there's a lot of people are saying, you know, he was going to soon be in that position, and there's nothing wholly inappropriate about what he did. But it comes down to the very bottom line is, what did he say to Mike Pence, and how did Mike Pence come to his defense so much? So if I think how it's handled will tell us whether he lied to Mike Pence or whether they were covering up for him. I guess
my question to you, Andy, would be, if you're the president of the United States, do you want to protect your vice president or do you want to protect General Flynn? Because he clearly, or at least according to the published reports, he was not candid with Mike Pence, and Pence went out and said things that were not accurate.
This is a new administration that's been fumbling a little bit in its early days. Mm-hmm. They really have to learn how to govern, just like every administration does. But we can't have a discussion about someone using a fake ID to get a job and then have someone, break a law like this in a position of power and not ask that some small slap on the wrist be made. After that, Trump needs to get his house in order and either come out and say this was a mistake and Mike Pence and him are on the same page now, it won't happen again. As for the act itself, it's not that big a deal. It's illegal, certainly, but obviously it's not the first time anyone ever felt somebody out about a future situation or conversation.
But here's the point. If you're the National Security Advisor of the United States and you used to be the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, wouldn't you think that every conversation you had, especially with a Russian, was being recorded? So how could you deny the topic of a conversation when you knew that somewhere, somebody in the system had a copy of your conversation?
Right.
And it's such a leaky, the information easily gets out.
And
especially when the president has had this rocky relationship with the intelligence community. Somebody in the intelligence community released this to the Washington Post.
And that is another problem.
That is another big problem.
Concern.
I mean, we had a lot. There's a lot of leaks here.
There's a lot of leaks.
There would not have to be the leaks if people told the truth. And so the thing that I can't get past is what would have prevented you from just being honest about the nature of the conversation. I mean, he's not new to this game, even though it's a new administration. He's not a novice in his position.
Here's something else I want to say. Came out later yesterday, and now is the suggestion, this is a rumor at the moment, that Russia, the Russians, Vladimir Putin, may release Edward Snowden to Donald Trump as a little gift, as a little peace offering. What would that do?
That's a gift to the press and all of us.
Yeah, and it's like handing him a stink bomb. I mean, I think that's like...
Nobody wins. Nobody wants to see Edward Snowden back here in the United States. Not the previous administration, not this one, not anyone.
I don't know that that's the case.
Go ahead, John. I don't know that's the case
that no one wants to see Edward Snowden back. There have been some on Capitol Hill who have been very vocal on the fact that he is a traitor, including, I think, John McCain.
Yes.
Who is chairman of the Armed Services Committee. I think there are people that would love to see him back and would love to see him face the full force of the law for what he did.
Why would Putin do it?
Well, I'm sure they've gotten everything they're going to get from him. I mean, he's a spent commodity now. Whatever he had, he's provided. So they don't. What benefit is he to them now? Giving him to the United States doesn't.
He could be a nice little embarrassment. We could have sort of kangaroo court scenes, all sorts of stuff that goes on. I mean, very much an embarrassment.
Perhaps.
So, you get to throw a little wrench into the works. Sure. And why not? I mean, obviously, Putin has proven he likes to throw wrenches into the works.
Yeah, but Donald Trump during the campaign said that Snowden should be executed.
He did.
What are you going to challenge him on that now? Do we want Snowden back or not?
I mean, I think there are people who have a vested interest in making sure that he faces the full force of the law because of his actions. I question why Putin would offer him as sort of it's almost like a sacrificial lamb, perhaps, especially in light of what Donald Trump has said about Snowden. But I think it's a ticking time bomb.
Exactly. I think he's going to see.
You think that I'm a good friend, Mr. President? Here.
Well, exactly. Now he's going to. He's testing Trump on his conviction about how seriously do you want to go after Snowden? And
I think a lot of Trump's base likes Snowden.
You're absolutely correct, both on the right and left.
And a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters.
I think so, too.
Right.
They like
again,
someone to
I,
shake it
I would divulge from that. I think that there are an awful lot of people that voted for Donald Trump who look upon Snowden as a traitor.
Yep.
and have no sympathy for traitors.
There are a lot of people who see Snowden
the bottom line. He's a traitor.
Right. I want to say a lot, okay?
There are a lot of people who see Snowden, though, as someone who is undermining a government that obscures information and withholds information from the public. And I think that could be on the Trump side and on the Sanders side.
No, I think it's split. You and I disagree. You think he's a traitor. I don't. I think he was a whistleblower. You and I disagree on that. But I also think this is, as you say, this is an issue that most people would want to just go away because it's going to put, first of all, it's going to dominate news.
Right.
It's going to take Trump off track, certainly. There's no question that Attorney General Sessions is, you know, would have him, you know, locked up in a heartbeat when he comes back, if indeed this is a real story. Or is this another fake news story? We'll have to wait and see. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to hear the voice of Boise, Idaho. Don't go away.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you for joining us tonight. Let's go to Bob listening to us in Boise, Idaho on KBOI, one of the big blowtorches of the great state of Idaho. Go ahead. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can, loud and clear.
Okay, great. I was just wondering where the outrage is about the leaks of all of this information.
Well, I read a statement today
from the New York Times in our local paper about how all the federal Democrats that work for the government are, you know, going to fight against Trump and try to stymie what he did. And where's the outrage about that? If that would have happened when Obama took office, I would have read, there would have been front page stories on every newspaper in the country about people in the government trying to stop him from getting his agenda done.
But it did happen in the Obama administration. Mitch McConnell himself stated that they were going to do everything that they could to halt the president's agenda, President Obama's agenda. So I think,
that's a political person, not a person in the government charged under their, in the Treasury Department or the whatever.
Well, the acting Attorney General of the United States.
Yeah, the Attorney General was fired for not enforcing the name.
As she should have been.
Right. It was completely inappropriate.
Your point was, we talked about it briefly during the break, and that is, there are too many leaks in this administration. I fault the administration for, you know, their rollout on the immigration order was not handled well, just as a business. If he's a businessman, it was not rolled out in any business-like way. And I think also leaks, I think there's just too many leaks in this administration. By the way, these are people that, you know, there's always some backbiting that goes on in the inner workings of any White House. But it seems to me with 3 weeks in, there's way too much of that. And in this particular case, which I think will continue to, I'm going to predict something, it will continue to be an embarrassment, the relationship that the president has with some members of the intelligence community. But, you know, when John Brennan walked out of government service, he walked out with an awful lot of secrets, and he walked out with an avowed hatred of the president of the United States. The words back and forth between the outgoing, CIA director and the president of the United States were unlike anything that I could ever remember.
I always say
so there's
that
gonna be, there's going to be a lot more leaks coming from the intelligence community to embarrass this administration.
I always say that an organization.
Yeah, go ahead.
We all know that anybody that didn't go along with the policies of the Obama administration were now not going anywhere in the government. So the sycophants advanced for 8 years, as long as they went along with what the Democratic Party line was.
But that generally is the case.
Yeah.
You want people to go along with the President of the United States. But in this particular case, the civil service workers, of which there are many, I mean, the vast majority of the people working for the federal government don't like them.
One civil service person say, I'm gonna stymie Obama's agenda?
No.
But there's about that?
There's no civil service. I don't see one employee as having the ability to stymie the agenda of President Trump. But what I do know is that an organization is a reflection of its leadership. And the fact that there are so many existing leaks in this administration just shows that there are many cracks in the organization, which means less bombast and more building internally to make sure that you can bring your civil servants and bring your departments on board.
We're also talking about a president that came in that promised to drain the swamp. The swamp was a lot of Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is made up of a lot of bureaucrats, a lot of people that love keeping their jobs, a lot of people that tend to, you know, for the last 8 years and many years before that, they're comfortable. And he is now coming in with a promise to do something that will make them very uncomfortable.
And I give him credit for the fact that he has been very dramatic. He's issuing these executive orders by the bushel basket. He understands that there is within the Republican Party, within the base, within his voters, individuals who are fed up with the timidity and the weakness that they've seen from previous Republican administrations. You elect a Republican president and nothing changes, nothing happens. He's demonstrating that he's going to have a 100 days the way FDR had his 100 days, and he's following through on his promises. He has the media against him. He has Hollywood against him. The Democrats are waging,
academia.
At the academic world, all these auxiliary arms of the Democratic Party are all arrayed against him, something that Barack Obama did not have to face. And I give him tremendous credit for persevering with this. So the rollout of this could have been handled better. But when you look at the totality of what he's done, I give him high marks for what he's accomplished.
I think that's ridiculous. Some things you just can't make it about your ego, and I'm afraid sometimes that Donald has done that. He should have rolled all this out more quietly. You can still take credit for it later. You can let the press give you credit for it. All the press isn't against him. All I'm saying is you don't need to make enemies while doing this. You didn't need to claim credit for the ICE raids and make people afraid. You just need to let it happen.
There's actually quite a lot that he's doing that is quiet.
Go ahead, Bob. Go ahead. Ask the question again.
Can I ask you what's wrong with the order and reading the statute, what's wrong with the order and why isn't it legal?
I'm sorry for bringing that subject back up.
Legal.
My apologies.
There's a lot of people that will tell you that there is there's nothing wrong with it. There are three very political federal judges. They keep talking about the fact that one or two of them were appointed by George Bush, but they have proven as members of the Ninth Circuit to be this is a notorious liberal circuit. It is the most overturned circuit of the Supreme Court. It has proven to have the most political opinions. And if you read that opinion, it's very clear that they've sort of created some very interesting versions of standing. They created standing for people that aren't even citizens or within the United States. They also created standing based on some very tangential issues to try to get this workaround. And not once did the court address the very clear rule of law that gives him this unfettered
and John. Right. And I also understand that Judge Robart, who issued the original order, while he is a George W. Bush appointee, right, was recommended by Washington's liberal Democrat Senator Patty Murray as part of the senatorial courtesy where senators get to recommend slots for judgeships.
We'll go on. That'll be a future court will decide that. Bob, thanks for your call. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Jeannie is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Hi, Bruce. It's Jeannie Ramirez, Singing Lady Revolution, rock singer by day, house cleaner by
okay.
I mean, rock singer by night, house cleaner by day. But the thing I was going to ask the panel was, why do you think that there's been silence with Comey? You know, he was supposed to be doing an investigation on the Russian possible connections to elections, and we're going to have a huge protest March 13th. He's coming to speak, Comey is, in Austin. And the questions we have for him is, what's going on? And I trust Maxine Waters. When she came out of that meeting a few weeks ago with just only, you know, me, you, nobody on that panel knows what happened in that meeting, but it was only for, you know, it was a very, very high prioritized.
Jeannie, hang on a second. The FBI has an investigation going on. They're not offering an assessment of that investigation at the moment. They've been criticized for doing that, as you know, by Hillary Clinton's campaign during the campaign. I think perhaps he learned a lesson not to be speaking about an investigation that's going on. And again, according to at least the published reports, it appears that this leak about the Flynn conversation in the recording was something that was recorded by the FBI. So the FBI, again, is in the center of a lot of controversies, as they frequently are. And when he goes to Austin, I'm sure you'll be there to give him a warm welcome.
Yeah, no,
and he'll be listening in on your phone conversation, yeah, probably,
okay,
as well.
I love it. I have nothing to fear, and I'm okay with it. Oh, by the way, I do think that Snowden, I agree with you tonight, Snowden was a whistleblower, and that was under Obama that didn't do enough protection under whistleblowers. I feel I'm a Bernie Sanders, you know, supporter.
Yes.
And I feel like right now we don't know. To us, it's just a lot of, we don't have a lot of trust. There's just not a lot of trust.
Jeannie, let me ask you a question. You've identified yourself as a Bernie Sanders supporter. Can you define a deportable offense? Is there any offense that you know of that you would deport somebody if they violated that law?
Murder,
what?
Let's see,
okay.
Sexual assault, sexual abuse or abuse on women, children, men.
Okay.
I could go on and on and on. I mean, there's, of course, but
okay,
the
good.
People need to hear there were three roundups every year under Obama also, and also it was at this time of year they had told the public. So, you know, I'm not, you know, boo-hoo. I mean, yeah, I'm Mexican. I'm sad about it. I mean, yesterday I cleaned the house, and they were like, my clients and the other nannies were like, oh, my God, they're picking up people in East Austin. I was like, sad, super sad that people are getting so great, but don't break the law. If you're here, you know, wake up. You don't pay your taxes. I'm worried about not being able to pay all my taxes, and, you know, IRS is going to come after me, and I'm a citizen.
Jeannie, the next time you call, I want you to bring a little more passion to your conversation. Okay? Thanks for listening tonight. Thanks for listening. You call frequently. It's always good to hear from you. Always great to hear from people from Austin, Texas. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. We're going to talk about a couple of other issues before we go off the air, but I do want to also make a couple of comments based on conversations that we've had here over the last several weeks. You have heard me be very critical of Meet the Press, to a lesser extent with George Stephanopoulos and the Sunday morning shows, most of which I end up screaming at the television sets, perhaps much like watching and listening to the broadcast this evening. However, I do want to put one thing in context. One of the longest-running public affairs shows, it's 50 years old. Now, Meet the Press is 70 years old. But Washington Week is celebrating its 50th year. This is on public broadcasting. And I've been watching it. I'm watching it off and on for many, many years. I've been a fan of it for many, many years. But I want to put it in context because that's a program that has four, basically, inside the Beltway establishment reporters. That's the steady fare that they have. And their moderator does a terrific job. Ms. Cook is now replaced to the late Gwen Ifill. Mm-hmm. But you watch that show, and I'm not talking back at this television set. I'm not throwing anything at the television set. There's a discussion of the same issues that you will see on the other programs, but a question is asked without argumentative premise. A reporter is debriefed and offers their opinion. There's a discussion like we much have on this program. And at the end of 30 minutes, there's no yelling. There's no shouting. There is no bias that is obvious to me by the moderator, which is not the case if I'm watching Meet the Press or George Stephanopoulos, to a lesser extent John Dickerson, although I don't get a chance to watch that show as often as I do the others. So I do want to throw a bouquet out to Washington Week and as a great discussion. By the way, it generally follows us every Sunday night on WYCC in Chicago. So if you haven't seen it, you know, in its original air in Chicago, you can watch it after our show every Sunday night. But again, it really is a great show, and it's based on the moderator, who I think takes her responsibility very seriously. Now, speaking on those who are now the guests, I want to get everybody's reaction, because in this administration, we know we have a tough-talking president who loves to tweet, and so it's interesting to see the people that are being sent out to speak for the President of the United States. And Rance Priebus, the Chief of Staff, he's been out there a lot. Kellyanne Conway has been out there a lot. To a lesser extent, Sean Spicer has been out there. Not so much, although he's having the daily press briefing and is now getting beat up every Saturday night on Saturday Night Live. But then today, Stephen Miller. Now, he has been on before, but Stephen Miller had the grand slam today. He was on all the shows. And I want to get everybody's reaction. I'll start with you, Amara. Insofar as the official spokesperson for the administration, is there anybody that's standing out as you think is doing a really good job of representing the controversial aspects of this administration?
It's really hard to tell because it has been sort of shifting. I thought that Sean Spicer represents the administration well. I thought that the way he engages with the press, the way he used alternative facts, you will, represents the Trump administration. I think that he characterizes it. But you do kind of have this shifting cast of characters who all speak on behalf of the administration. So it's hard to keep track of who is the more official spokesperson. And it's also hard to keep track of who the administration wants to be that spokesperson. I think they're still testing it out, actually, to see who they want speaking on their behalf.
John,
I think Kellyanne and Rance Priebus have done very well, but I particularly thought that Steve Miller was terrific today.
He was.
I saw him on Fox, on ABC, and on Meet the Press. I thought he was great. He stood his ground. He didn't let anything slide. He fought back, and he would come back a second time and not let anything get by. I thought
he's a young guy, too.
And personable.
Yes.
Yeah. And personable.
And he did it without being
young. I actually think he might be a rising star within the Republican establishment.
Particularly with Stephanopoulos. He really went toe-to-toe with Stephanopoulos, and I've been waiting for someone to do that, and I thought he did a great job.
Andy.
He did a wonderful job today. There's no question about it. Far better than the other two or three that I've seen. He was consistent. He didn't pander to anybody. He stood his ground when he needed to stand his ground, and he absolved himself when he didn't have the information necessary. and he didn't, you know, he didn't apologize for that. He would rather have give no answer than a bad one. He didn't leave himself open to much attack, and he presented himself well.
And no hem, no haw,
none.
No nope. breath. This guy was as articulate as anyone I've ever seen on television.
And yet he was different on Meet the Press than he was.
Yes, he was.
On ABC.
Right.
And George Stephanopoulos. So he wasn't just, you know, he didn't have a script in front of him. He winged it. He was different. He was still on point. Very good.
Well, and he wasn't robotic at all. He understood the minefield that he was walking in, and that was really impressive. But my favorite has always been Kellyanne Conway, and I'm going to make this point right now, Bruce, because she seems to be in a little bit of hot water right now. But I am wearing an Ivanka Trump dress top right now. I love it.
Ka-ching.
And I'm going to put that in there. And as soon as I actually saw that live when it happened, and of course, she was just making a comment. She was making a light thing. And now this is the press overreacting one more time. But I think one of the things that Kellyanne Conway does is she's incredibly personal. She's light on her feet. She gets the issues. And I would say among those three, they've been Reince Priebus and Miller today, and they were they understand the message, they understand the minefields, they understand what's at issue.
And this is something we haven't seen in previous Republican administrations, where their spokesmen come out and are tough and fight back and answer the charges and give contrasting arguments and don't let the little snide liberal remarks pass.
Kellyanne Conway was unimpressed with her. I've always been unimpressed with her. I think the difference between a Steve Miller and a Kellyanne Conway is that you have someone who's actually thoughtful and someone who is a true believer. I always felt that Kellyanne Conway was more of an opportunist or someone who
hired gun.
So, exactly, more of a hired gun. And so when you are that, it's harder for you to be as fluid and as natural with your ability to stay on message, to hit when you need to hit, to fall back when you need to fall back.
The thing I like, and I made this comment several weeks ago when Sean Spicer made his first appearance with George Stephanopoulos, and everyone who has been on follows this same rule. And that is, they do not pay deference to the moderator.
Right.
They challenge assumptions, especially it drives me. The assumptions that Chuck Todd uses for basically every question is challenged. And historically, whether they're Republicans or Democrats appearing on those shows, whoever their spokesman is, they sort of genuflect a little bit to the moderator. They're not doing it.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm so tired of Republican spokesmen who come on and they act as though they're buddies with these moderators, as though we're big friends and we're on a first-name basis. And these people are trying to cut their throats, and they keep smiling through it all. Probably some consultant has told them, you know, go out there and be affable,
nice.
Be likable. But I'm glad to see that we have someone who's willing to fight.
I'm going to ask everyone to make a prediction, because, you know, once a year, one of the big stories of the year, which the Washington media covers ad nauseum, is the White House press correspondents' dinner. And they all wonder if the president comes, and the jocular with the relationship between the press, and it's all the Hollywood stars show up. Let me ask you, I'm going to start with you, Stephanie.
All right.
Do you think Donald Trump will attend that meeting, that dinner this year?
Yes, I do. But who else will show up is the question. Will celebrities boycott the way they did the inauguration?
Andy, will he stand up and go to that dinner, which is it's about as inside a tradition as possible, or will he stick it to the media by not showing up for their event?
He'll show up to the event. There's no question.
Oh, I think he will. And, you know, there are those who believe that episode in which President Obama mocked him, that was maybe the pivotal point at which Donald Trump decided to run for president. Sitting there and having to take that mockery from Barack Obama, that may have put Donald Trump in the White
House.
There
may be some truth to that. Mara?
I think he'll show up, but he has very large shoes to fill. President Obama, the way he masterfully worked the correspondence dinner was
he was great about it. Let's go to Jerry in Rosberg, or is it Roseburg or Rosberg?
Roseburg,
Ohio. Go ahead, Jerry. You're listening to us on Sirius XM satellite radio. Go ahead.
Okay, Roseburg, Oregon.
Oregon, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say that you guys were talking about General Flynn and the sanctions on Russia, mm-hmm. and it was the same day Obama slapped sanctions on Russia for interfering in our elections.
Right.
Russia's got quite a history lately of doing stuff like that, and war in Syria and invading Ukraine. I thought you guys skimmed over that pretty quick. I just wonder, why would he even be talking to him?
John, I'll let you talk. Why would Flynn be talking to the Russians at that point in time?
Well, after all, the Soviet, you know, old habits die hard. Russia continues to have an arsenal of nuclear weapons. They are not, as someone described them, a superpower. Their economy is a wreck. Their form of government is a disaster. Their birth rate is plummeting. But they still have a credible nuclear arsenal. So obviously you have to deal with them the same way you deal with other nations. What I'm glad about is that Democrats have suddenly discovered Russia. Because for most of my career, I was accustomed to being ridiculed by the left as to why are you Republicans always worried about the Soviet Union? You know, you're always too concerned. We were berated for years of having the hammer and sickle on our brains.
Oh, the shoe is on the other foot.
Now,
folks,
suddenly,
yeah,
Mitt
Romney knew that, too.
We got to pause. We got to pause.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through February, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Bye. Or... Chicago. Yeah, probably, you know, thanks people. Very much for joining us. Last week on this program, we talked about how the progressives had learned a lesson from the Tea Party, and that they were starting to flex their muscles, not only with some of the street demonstrations, but we suggested they were going to be probably using the same tactics of going to members of Congress and sort of confronting them. That was certainly one of the stories that came up this week. And Amara, is this the beginning of a long tactic that we're going to see?
I think it better be. I mean, I think what the progressives are doing, there's a roadmap that has been set, I think, from the Tea Party, by the Tea Party, that was very effective over the last 8 years, 10 years, what have you. But I think the bigger question for me is what the Democratic Party is going to do to make sure that they can attract people into the party, to make sure that their message resonates, and to make sure that they're relevant. I mean, I think that's the bigger question. There's talk of progressives who see going into the Democratic Party to completely transform it, but without Democratic leadership being willing to be self-reflective and honest about why they're losing and why they have lost so much, I don't see their being able to be very successful in the short term.
Well, do you think that Bernie Sanders understands what needs to be done?
I think he does. I think he understood it even getting into the race, even being that progressive voice that really spoke to so many people who have felt abandoned or that felt that the Democratic Party didn't really speak to their issues. But without Democratic Party leadership being willing to listen to the voice of the people and instead wanted to present their own candidate and force people to support their candidate, their chosen handpicked candidate, that was off-putting for a lot of new potential parties.
Well, I think the problem is, I think Bernie Sanders is very limited in his appeal. And I know this people, but his, you know, he was appealing on very small levels. I mean, the things that Donald Trump really hit on in the middle of America, and let's be completely honest here, he had more than half of the people in most of the states of the country voting for him. And except for California, Illinois, New York, he's got the rest of the country. That Bernie Sanders was only speaking to some of the concerns that those people have, and that might be he did talk about jobs. He was the only Democrat that really talked about jobs. But it's more than that. The message is more than that. It's about the disconnect from government, the government trying to rule the life. It's also understanding national security is huge on everybody's radar. The people that voted for Donald Trump voted because they wanted some strength in that area. Bernie Sanders didn't really offer that. So it's really a wide range of issues. Bernie Sanders hits on some of them, but the problem is we have all these protesters going out there. They're protesting, but we don't know what they're saying. They're not really offering anything else. And I think you were right in that they've got to come up with a long-term message. It's not that their message, to use the words of Obama, needs to be said better and louder. They don't have a message, and they haven't for a long time.
Andy, I'm sure you hang around with a lot of people that were big Bernie Sanders supporters.
I hang around with people on both sides of the aisle. The problem with the Bernie Sanders supporters, the protests and things that are going on now, God bless them. Get energized. By all means, hold this administration to the fleet to the fire. That is the job of the minority party. That is the job of the people that are out of power, is to say, you know, is to keep people honest and, you know, and let's have a conversation. And I'm glad the Tea Party did it. I'm glad Republicans did it when Obama was in office. What the Bernie Sanders people and these protesters have to understand is we cannot go into the Democratic Party, cannot start purging itself. They can't start pushing themselves all to the left. You have to continue to be inclusive. This is what killed the Republican Party for a long time, and Donald Trump saved it from this to a large degree. You have got to find a way to include everybody. The people that voted for Bernie Sanders, largely, I have the same concerns as the people who voted for Donald Trump. We're talking about a lot of people who felt left out and left behind. For many of the same reasons. A lot of people have a lot in common. Let's figure it out. And in the meantime, the Democrats better figure out a message and a way to include everybody.
The trouble that the Democratic Party faces is that the base of the Democratic Party is moving further and further to the left. There was an item on Washington Week a couple of weeks ago in which they mentioned that when you get below Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, the next generation of up-and-coming leaders are much further to the left than they are. Yes. And this is a phenomenon you're seeing in Europe. The Labor Party is in the throes of disaster because of Corbyn, a leader who is of the far left in British politics. The French socialists just destroyed themselves by choosing a far left candidate. The socialist candidate is running fourth in the polls for the French presidential elections. You're seeing this trend throughout the Western world, parties of the left moving further and further to the left. And that's what I see happening with the Democratic Party. And if they do that, they're just going to spiral into continued defeat. You look at the strength the Republican Party has at the state level. 25 states today have a Republican governor and Republican control of both houses of the legislature. There are, I think, four states where the Democrats have all of that power.
But I think part of the issue was that the Democratic Party had actually shifted so far to the right. So if you look at the Clinton administration from his first and second term, if you look right here in Chicago, for example, under our Democratic mayor and the policies that have been implemented, I think it's less that the Democratic Party has been on this continuous shift to the left and more so that they have been increasingly disconnected from the voices of the people that make up, that have traditionally made up the Democratic Party. And what that's done is it's allowed the Republican Party to come in, such as in the state, in the example of our governor in Illinois, whose message resonates with those voters. What's happening is that there's less party loyalty because we have not seen what we believe we should have seen from the Democratic Party. And so now they're either breaking away and they're progressives or they're looking at libertarians or Republicans.
People's party too.
Definitely.
People that, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, at the end of the day, the Democrats, they're just not talking about the things that people really care about. And that is, you know, the economy, and they're not coming up with solutions. You know, Obamacare hasn't been the success the Democrats think it has. It has destroyed many, many businesses. Most people work in small businesses. That's been decimated under Obama and the left. And political correctness is another huge component of this. And I think we see it in the way that most Americans are now rejecting the media and what comes out of Hollywood.
Right. We, on that note, want to thank all of our guests for joining us tonight. Our thanks to Fritz Goldman and Chris Zwick and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. Great panel this evening. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.